Hi, this is Ozil Saw, your host for MAPS Manor Power Solutions Family Marriage Show. Welcome. Thank you for joining us today. We actually will have Kim Hicks, who is the Executive Director of the YWCA. She, of course, was on our last show, and you know what? She has so many years of experience in many of these organizations in Thompson that we'll wander back for one more time. And this time we are going to talk about just some general issues relating to some of our groups that we deal with on an ongoing basis. MAPS, Manpower Solution, of course, welcomes Kim again to our show. Kim, thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
And Kim, Kim has been the Executive Director for the YWCA. She's also been the Executive Director for the Boys and Girls Club and also for the Thompson Crisis Center. So while she's here, we want to pick her brains as much as possible when it comes to some of the issues dealing with youth, dealing with women in crisis, and also, of course, dealing with our population that are homeless or at the risk of being homeless. So, Kim, we are going to have a nice chat about some issues I think that has been long time coming that we do need to talk about. First thing I want to talk about is the young people. You know, you worked at the Boys and Girls Club as the EDD for many years. From what you've seen during your time and what you see now, what do you think are the major challenges facing our young people these days?
Well, I mean, I haven't been in that field for a long time or worked with that population for a long time, maybe just a scattering at the Y and at the Thompson Crisis Center. But back in my time at the Boys and Girls Club, definitely there was a lack of, and people always are amazed by this, because there was a lack of a wide range of activities that, you know, that respond to all different types of youth. Not all youth are sportsy, right? Not all youth are artsy. And so at that time, when I was at the Boys and Girls Club, there was a big push to try to get, you know, some free kind of recreational activities, you know, things like open gyms and, you know, for sportsy kids, but then some open craft nights. I have to say, when I look back and I look now, I think Thompson's does a wonderful job at trying to make sure that we have activities that are responsive to all different types of youth, right?
Yeah, and you know what? What really struck me is that new outdoor exercise pad across from Giant Tiger. And I see how much that's being used, and not just used by young people, but I know different age groups.
Absolutely.
You know, you have some of the older ones that, you know, of course, they come in groups and they want to play basketball. But also you have some of the younger kids there who just hang out, you know. And quite often with our young people, I think we forget that many of them just want a place that they can call their own, that they can just go to. And I think for a long time, and still now, the Boys and Girls Club, I think kind of symbolized that. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, back in my youth serving days, which is many years ago, you're right. Youth need that sense of belonging, sense of, you know, where they fit. And we need to have those places for them to be able to feel like they fit. The Boys and Girls Club does a wonderful job at providing after-school programs, providing a late-night program for, you know, youth over the age of 12, and with a wide range of activities. You know, another youth-serving agency would be, you know, the Mama We Talk, which has, you know, their Northern Circle of Youth, and they do a lot of work around, you know, empowering youth to become leaders and giving them the skills to become leaders in their own community. There has been a lot of changes from the time I was ED at the Boys and Girls Club in terms of services that are available for youth. You know, most recently with Mary Mound taking over that building down on Hemlock. I think it's Hemlock. And, you know, so they are, you know, making strides to try to respond to youth. One area I think that, you know, that we have kind of only touched on in Thompson is that youth homelessness piece.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, children aging out of care. And, you know, as we know, they're, you know, particularly in Manitoba, you know, the percentage of children in care is huge in comparison if we look across Canada. And, you know, primarily most youth in care are coming from outlying communities. Mm-hmm. So they're being kind of, you know, taken from their own community, and then they're kind of just plunked into Thompson, kind of an urban center. So, I mean, these, you know, Northern Circle of Youth, Boys and Girls Club, do a really good job at trying to respond to those youth. But always, we always have, you know, youth that kind of fall through the cracks and really don't feel like they belong anywhere. So It's a topic that's not talked about a lot, youth homelessness.
Yeah, and you know what? When you look at reality, going back, as you said, about a lot not born and raised in Thompson, but coming into Thompson, we have a lot of adults who just come into Thompson who themselves, as adults, are trying to get used to you know, the pace and, you know, the whole idea of an urban setting. And then you look at a young kid and you realize, you know, that's magnified tenfold when, you know, trying to get used to a different lifestyle. And it's true enough, we don't have enough supports in that area. That's one thing that I think, you know, we do need to talk more about. And I think we'll talk about the why, of course, later. But I think the why does some outreach or try to do some more work in that area. Not as much as you'd like to, I'm sure. So switching to topics, you were the...
Oh, wait. Mm-hmm. I just want to mention something else. I always do this to you, Oswald.
Yeah, no problem.
I just also want to say, just because I don't want to, for youth, in terms of services for youth, so youth homelessness, youth addictions, is and youth mental health. But, you know, in those years that I've been gone from the Boys and Girls Club, another great, you know, organization that kind of popped up by AFM was the Hope North Recovery Center for youth. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think we make good strides in certain areas for youth, but obviously we still have gaps in terms of how we deal with youth homelessness, for an example, or the scale of youth addictions and mental health issues. So we continue to kind of address these areas, and the Y does too. Continue to address these areas by sitting on committees that, you know, talk about youth homelessness and youth addictions. So, yeah, but I don't ever want to negate that we've come a long way in terms of how we provide services for youth, but we also have a long way to go.
We have a long way to go. I mean, and when you talk about, and we will have a guest later on this year on child exploitation, you know, and we'll be talking about that issue in more in depth. We will be talking about gangs and, you know, quite often these kids who are, as we mentioned at first, who are looking at a place to belong, quite often that's used as a real bait for some people who will exploit the situation. You know, it's sad to say.
So just to, like, on the youth services too, we can't forget about MKO, who has a youth department, as well as, you know, KTCs. So there are places that are specifically targeting how to work with youth and ensure that, you know, we provide what they require.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you. To switch to topics now, you were the ED for the Thompson Crisis Center. You were there for many years. When it comes to women in crisis and what you've seen with some of the programming back then and now, what's your thoughts on where we're at in regards to gaps and where we need to spend more time at?
So this would be extremely controversial. I can probably talk about it now because I'm not the ED, but even when I was the ED, you know, it's extremely controversial in terms of length of access for service, but also no services available following your stay or nowhere able to go. So when I was at the crisis center, you know, how many women would come in, you know, do their stay. I have heard rumblings that, you know, the province is kind of relaxing that 30-day kind of max stay. Really, crisis services should always be client-centered and based on an individual client approach. You know, someone maybe only needs to be 10 days, whereas somebody else might need to be 6 months.
Right.
It depends on what you're connecting or what services they require to connect to. My biggest frustration as the, you know, the executive director at the crisis center was when that 30-day stay was up, or even if we were able to secure an extension, most women are having to return back to their abusive partner or back to their abusive family because there is no other option for them to be able to, you know, start over somewhere new. So most will return, which was extremely frustrating for me because we don't have the ability to stream them into anything in Thompson. Now, that's back when I was, you know, there has been some advancements, you know, the transition programs that are, you know, kind of set up in Thompson. So Crisis Center does have a transition program. Mama We Talk has a transition program. The Y has a transition program. And now, you know, super excited that MAPS has, you know, a transition program. But that is a drop in the bucket when we talk about women that are coming from, you know, in crisis, coming in for service, and then, you know, after 30 days having to return back. So we see this cycle of entire generations coming through because they just have to keep returning back, right, to their abusive situations. So that's extremely frustrating to me. The other frustrating piece when I talk about women in crisis is most organizations have a very specific criteria in terms of someone being able to access service, right? And, I mean, that's just the way our systems are set up. So, you know, women perhaps that are in crisis because maybe they've been evicted, right? Or whatever the circumstances are, don't have the ability to access service in Thompson. So we're very, I don't want to use the word restrictive, but it's the way our system, it's a systematic issue that if you're in crisis, you have to meet that specific criteria to access that service, right?
Yeah, and I want to touch on that a fair bit because I think it ties into how our organizations are funded. But I'll just take a real quick break. You are listening to Family Matters. We have as our special guest, Kim Hicks, who's the executive director of the YWCA. And we are picking our brains a fair bit as the prior ED for both the Boys and Girls Club and also the Thompson Crisis Center to talk about some far-reaching issues. So once again, Kim, thank you for being here. We left off at how quite often programs are restricted, and probably mostly due to how they're funded as to what they can provide to a client. So you want to expand more on that?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's a system, it's the way you're funded, what you have to meet, you have to meet whatever criteria has been set out for you to deliver that service. You know, how wonderful a world would be if someone's in crisis, regardless of what crisis they're in, that they're able to walk into an organization and there's an immediate response to try to connect that person to whatever service they require,
right?
We don't have that luxury. So, you know, the Y, well, I'll talk a little bit about the Y. The Y ends up, you know, with a lot of women in crisis that don't fit the criteria other places.
Right.
And so we try to be, you know, we run on a responsive individual client response model. We call it the 3R model, where we're, you know, we make sure that whatever we're providing is relevant, it's realistic, and it's respectful for that woman. But it's frustrating because we don't have the ability to have them go somewhere. So let's just talk about housing. You know, a woman comes in, she's been evicted, and, you know, she's got, you know, two or three children, and she has nowhere else to go. So she doesn't, you know, she doesn't meet criteria at other organizations. So she's, you know, at the Y, and she said, well, I don't know what to do because there is no housing. She's got no rental history. You know, she's been deemed not to be a victim of, you know, family violence. And she's at the, you know, the doorstep of the Y. There isn't a place for us to send her to. There is no homeless shelter that, you know, that allows children. So where right. do women go? Where do women go with their children if they're fleeing any crisis situation mm-hmm. and don't meet criteria at other places? Where does that woman go? Because we don't have a homeless shelter that accommodates women and children.
Right, right.
Or I mean, let's men and children. Like, yeah. I mean, it goes the other way, too. We've had men with children, you know, show up at the Y, too. So I think it's a huge gap, and I've been saying this way back since I was the crisis center ED, is where do women go? Or where do people go that have children that have nowhere to go?
You know, the interesting thing is that we talk a lot about when women should have to leave their community to come to Thompson. Do you feel that, what can communities do more of, you think, local leaders do more of?
In terms of family violence or yes. even in crisis, I think if you had outreach models and you had specific people that were responding to individual needs, mm-hmm. right, they could probably avert some of the issues that are happening. But again, our communities struggle with resources. Mm-hmm. Our communities struggle with housing. They struggle with overcrowding. They struggle with addictions and mental health. So I think we're all in the same boat in how do we, you know, we did a project back at, you know, when I was at the crisis center, we did a project about raising awareness about family violence, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And for people to recognize what family violence was and then to be able to start working towards healing kind of family violence, but or working towards providing services for people that were experiencing family violence, whether it was women, men, youth, you know, that type of thing. And people don't talk about that. They don't.
No, you don't.
We talk more. We talk more about it now mm-hmm, than mm-hmm. we ever did. It's not as taboo, but people don't talk about family violence, and people don't think what happens after, you know, a person leaves a home. Where do they go? What do they do? How? Mm-hmm. What are they going to do afterwards? Right? And the dynamics in northern communities, and I can't speak for the south, but definitely dynamics in northern communities play a huge role when we talk about those smaller communities, right? I mean, I'm from Churchill. It's 800 people. You know, if somebody was, you know, in a family violence situation, that whole entire town knows,
yep.
right? And then you end up in this situation where it's kind of this, well, it's not as bad. Like, it's downplayed, right?
So, well, I do want to add, because that's one thing that I've been thinking about. I know that the term domestic violence is now, they use intimate partner violence. They don't use domestic violence as much. The whole idea of violence, though, whether it's between a husband and wife or a girlfriend and boyfriend, at the end of the day, violence is still violence, right? And it's one thing that I've thought a bit about is just the whole idea of labeling it something that makes it sound like it's between two adults that know each other. In some way, it waters down the whole act of violence itself. Do you want to, what's your thoughts on that? Because I know the courts, when it comes to intimate partner violence, for instance, if a person was to walk down the street and they get punched in the face by some stranger, that would be dealt with most likely more severely than a wife or a husband that's been punched in the face by their partner.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
I just can't quite wrap my mind around why that is the case.
If you think back like prior, like years ago, you know, they used to dual charge all the time. Right, they'd go in and they would dual charge. So they would charge both the female and the male in the situation, mm-hmm. claiming that, well, they didn't know who was the instigator, or yes. you know, even with all the zero tolerance policies, it didn't matter. They were still dual charging. Even as recent as when I was at the crisis center, I can remember advocating and saying, like, I don't understand why we're dual charging, for an example, mm-hmm. but. I'm not really answering your question. I kind of went off to a little tangent. But, you know, to me, yeah, I don't know the answer. Yeah. I don't have any really insight. I think for me, violence is violence, mm-hmm. right? And it's so much more intense when we talk about family or intimate partner or those types of dynamics, right? I think is so much more intense and so much harder to navigate and try to provide service in that context. You know, somebody punches me in the face downtown, I charge them, the RCMP picks them up, charges them, right? Uh-huh. In a intimate partner, I may not even phone the RCMP
right.
for fear of retaliation in my community, for fear of retaliation in my family. But even when we talk, there's always been a huge focus on the intimate partner, which there should be. Mm. But when I was at the crisis center, when they started bringing in the family violence, I was shocked at some of the situations that were coming forward from, you know, children in homes, adult children in homes against parents, yeah. or, you know, parents against adult children. Like it was just amazing to me to see, yeah, the situations. And because we had always really just focused on intimate partner,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we were getting these situations where it was family violence and we were like, whoa, like, yeah. how do we deal with this? But I mean, we all know Northern Manitoba is known to be, you know, very high on the crime, you know, violent crime index, right?
Index, yes.
And so it's, you know, I think it's normalized. I always say this everywhere and people kind of look at me. I think we normalize violence just because we've grown up here, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's normal to us. And so we may not be as assertive or aggressive when we're dealing with, oh, well, that always happens. Oh, that always happens on a Friday night, right? As opposed to saying, this is unacceptable. Violence is unacceptable, period.
Yeah, period. And we will have to leave it at that. I know we were hoping to talk about the homeless or at risk of homeless population. I think we have to have Kim back in. In fact, I might ask her to just be my co-host for Family Marriage, because we always have these really interesting discussions.
I'm extremely disappointed because I haven't had a chance to talk about the homeless.
That's why we'll have to bring you back again. And, you know, I want to thank CHCM for airing Family Matters every second Wednesday. And yes, we will have Kim back again because we have a whole lot more we have to talk about. Thank you for joining us and have a great week. Thank you.
Thank you.